Hi, everyone. Today's episode is a conversation I had with Jimmy Rex, the number one realtor in Utah and author of You End Up Where You Are Heading. And Jimmy and I discuss how to stop limiting yourself by lowering the bar. Don't forget to check out Jimmy's podcast, The Jimmy Rex Show. And more importantly, join me every Friday for free, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. You can catch the replays featured on Spotify, featured on Entrepreneur. Join my text community, 949-298-2905. For anything else, email me directly, david@dmeltzer.com. I look forward to you joining me. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I have an ultra entrepreneur, Jimmy Rex. He is an author, host of course, the Jimmy Rex Show podcast, where you can catch us both, as you can catch us both here on the Playbook. And most importantly, he is the president of the Rex Real Estate Team. I always say this land was built on protecting the landowner, and Jimmy Rex has figured out how to not only protect the landowner, but to make the margins of millionaires from it. And we're going to have a good time discussing all of that. Welcome to the Playbook, Jimmy.
Dude, Dave, it's a pleasure to be here, man. I'm excited to have this conversation. You're somebody that I've been looking up to for a long time. And so this is a treat.
Awesome.
Dave, one thing I love about you is your motto is make a lot of money, help a lot of people, have a lot of fun. And I love that, especially the third part. I feel like so many people miss that third part. That's so important to have fun.
Yeah. And I think because they don't know how to have fun. You know, I talk about gratitude and finding the light, the love, and the lessons. Having fun is enjoying the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of your potential. It's enjoying when the pain is there as an indicator, not as a break. You know, it's all these different things. And to leave out having fun, that means you're taking life far too seriously.
Yeah, no, I agree. Everything that I do, I ask myself first, is this something I would do if I wasn't getting paid? Is this something I would do just because I want to do it? And then you do it anyways, but like do it that much better.
Let me shift that paradigm for you, man. So I used to say that too. I changed it around. I'm like this, how can I make this activity something I get paid for? So everything becomes really fun for me because it's like, okay, is it activity I get paid for or activity I don't? If I'm not getting paid, then how can I make it an activity I get paid for?
Well, that's what I was looking at, like your sports marketing. I've known about it for a while now, but it's like you guys get paid to take people to the best events in the world. I'm over here. I've been to 2 Super Bowls. I've been to the Final Four. I've been to the World Cup. I've done it all, but I've paid to go to all these events. I'm like, wait, this guy's got it figured out. He's getting people to pay him to go do all this amazing stuff.
Oh my God. What one Super Bowl, my best deal. I won't name the organization, but they're extremely well known within the NFL. They paid us in Super Bowl tickets and then allowed us to bring in big companies that paid us cash. And then we brought in 300 or so celebrities, athletes, and entertainers to the Super Bowl. And everything was paid for by the sponsors. We made commissions on like every side, and we got to brand ourselves. So every athlete, celebrity, entertainer, it was a huge business development platform. They weren't thanking our sponsors. They were thanking me and Warren Moon, going, dude, that was the best party ever. Thank you so much. And meanwhile, we had all these tickets to the Super Bowl on top of it.
Well, and the cool part is, you know, I've thrown a couple hundred parties in my life. I'm a huge party thrower. I'm the guy that puts the vacation together for all of us to go do. And one thing I've learned is the host gets the most, right? Like if you go to a party, no one really cares if you're there at the party, but if you're hosting it, if you're the one that put together a really cool experience, everybody wants to be a part of that. Everyone wants to be around you. And it just grows your network. It's kind of funny because by age 32, I mean, you had made over $100 million. You were the head of, you know, Lee Steinberg's entire agency, which is funny to me. When I was a kid, I watched the movie with Ryan Reynolds, where he's the sports agent, the entertainment agent. And I always wanted to be that guy. It's what the hell's the movie called? Best Friends or whatever, or Just Friends. That was kind of what your life was. Like, what a crazy life that you have lived. I mean, you've truly, and that's one thing why I love listening to your message, David, because it's one thing for people to say stuff if they've never experienced it. But in your case, you've made it all. You've had it all. You've actually lost it all. And then you've rebuilt this entire thing. I would rather learn from somebody like yourself that's gone through all this than pretty much anybody. I mean, first thing is like, how did you even build so quickly? By age 32, you were just, I mean, killing it. How did you even do that?
That was my downfall too, is that number one, just like basketball or sports, I believe everyone has a quantum nature about them. They have a potential. So no matter how much I worked at football or basketball, I would never be as good as, you know, Antonio Gates or LeBron James or Tom Brady, right? Or Warren Moon, for example. Well, when it came to making money, putting together business deals, selling, negotiating, right? It was quantum, right? It was born into me at five. You know, I could sell ice to Eskimos. I could understand dollars and value and convince and stimulate it, all these different things. So one thing was I was born into a quantum nature to make money. I had an energy for it. I wasn't blocking it. But, you know, for me, it's the lessons that come along with it. I learned at a young age to be more interested than interesting. So really understanding how to fulfill someone's need. My biggest problem was I didn't understand the relationship between giving and receiving. If I was 30 years old, my business model would have been help a lot of people to make a lot of money and have a lot of fun. Now, that's a subtle difference because what happened is most people believe this, the more you give, the more you receive. Right. But as a business person, a negotiator, a salesperson, I used to trade and negotiate on giving, right? I just would give to receive. So everything had judgments, conditions, ties, negotiations to it, even buying my mom a house or a car or giving down payments to my siblings or buying them a truck or whatever. There was always something I wanted back and expected back. And it harbored resentment and offense and guilt and all these other feelings. But once I shifted that saying, right? The more I receive, the more I can give, not the more I give, the more I can receive. Things change. Once I was able to tell people why I believe in making a lot of money to help a lot of people is much better than helping a lot of people to make a lot of money. You can't give what you don't have. And if the tent's there, you need to receive as much as you can to change the world.
I feel like it's such a valuable shift in mindset that gets lost so many times because so people come to me a lot. I'm known in, you know, in my area as the best networker in the entire city pretty much. And I've spent so much effort to learn what true networking is. And the most difficult thing for people is to give without expecting something in return. And it almost works as a negative when they give because they have this expectation of getting something back. And when it's not met, like you said, they harbor this resentment. My father, I love him, but a lot of times he would do stuff and then it came with a little bit of an attachment. And so you didn't even want him to do the thing anymore because you're like, I don't want to have to be beholden to you with that thing. And you had so many opportunities. One cool thing about your story is you were around so many people at such a young age that were doing hugely successful things. I know your newest book, Game Time Decision Making, you actually go into some of those lessons that you learned from athletes and different people. What was one trait that you saw or something? I know it's not just one trait, but what's something you saw that all these successful people did the same or had in common, David?
To me, the most common thing was this desire that they must be what they can be. Ooh. So they had evolved to the point where whether it was Michael Jordan being cut, you know, from his sophomore year in basketball or other athletes not getting drafted like Warren Moon or people just playing out telling you you suck, laughing at you, making fun of you, scoffing at you, telling you you never can do it. Olympic athletes, world champion athletes, they all have the story. But you know what they have in common? They have evolved to a point that they must be what they can be. Beholden to my favorite statement of enjoying the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of your potential. One other thing I want to add, Jimmy, as well, is it's interesting when you talk about people, you know, the biggest thing they have in is not just beholden to somebody giving and leveraging what they've given. What I found is even a bigger lesson, and it's also the lesson that I learned from athletes because they're the worst at it, is asking for help. Mm. You know, my biggest superpower is I finally learned to ask this one question. Hey, do you know anybody that could help me? Hey, Jimmy, I'm looking for more people to come to my free training to empower others, be happy. Can you do this for me? You know, can you put this into your podcast? Tell everyone to email me, right? Whatever it is. I never would ask. I always was beholden to myself that I felt bad about myself, that I was somehow hurting myself and others by asking for help when just the opposite is true, that I'm helping everyone by asking for help because my main intention is to help others.
Well, and the beauty of that too, is when you ask people to help you, I need to get better at that as well. And it's funny, like I've been on a couple other guest podcasts and they always, at the end of it, they send me an email like, hey, do you know anybody else in your circle that we could invite to be on the podcast? That would be a great guest. And I always think to myself, oh yeah, I should probably do that. I just don't ask, right? I have these amazing guests and I don't bring it up or ask them, but you allow other people to get the gift of giving, to get the gift of service when you allow them to serve you. And it's really a way to show gratitude is to be a good receiver of help, but you have to be able to ask for it in the first place. I love that that mindset.
Yeah, and take it in with appreciation. Like the word appreciation is so important in my life as well, because one, gratitude, as you know, is the construct of finding light, love, and lessons. the gratitude itself is a tool by which you expand and grow and create a vacuum for what you want. Gratitude will allow you to fill it with the light, love, and lessons instead of what you don't want or what other people want for you. What happens is a lot of people think they're doing the right things, and so they create expansion in their life and growth, and then the vacuum's created, right? When you expand something, a vacuum is created this way, but then they're trying to get what other people want for them or what they don't want. You know, they're focusing on that, and then they end up what other people want for them or what they don't want, and then they end up unhappy. I prefer to ask for help. Do you know anyone that could help me with this? And then what I want gets filled into the vacuum, not what other people or what I don't want because I'm too afraid or think I'm going to offend or insult somebody. When actually, in truth, when people ask me for help, I'm a how person, right? So I'll tell them, yes, I can help you, or I can kind of help you, or no, but let me try to find you someone that can. And, you know, every time someone asks me for help, I take it as, wow, what a compliment. I love when people put me out as the expert going, hey, can I just have 5 minutes of your time? I'm looking for a job. I need your help. I have 5 minutes of time. Can you look over my pitch deck? I think you're the best pitcher I've, you know, blah, blah, blah. How does that make you feel? I feel super. So you're giving me a gift.
I love that. One thing that I started doing, it's kind of funny. People will reach out to me for the most random things to help them on. It would be much easier to go to Google than to call me for that thing. But you know what I do every time? I swear to you, I just pull up Google and I find the answer and then I'll call them right back. I'm like, hey, I found the right guy for you. Hey, I found the answer to your question. They're like, I knew you'd be the guy to go to. And I'm like, Googled it. You know, I do that all the time. But well, one thing, again, I said this in the intro a little bit, but you said that you want to help empower 1 billion people to be happy. Where did that come from, and how do you go about measuring or doing something like that, David?
Yeah, so number one is over 1 billion people. I always tell people, don't limit yourself.
I love that.
Handmade constructs are amounts. Excuse me. When we put an amount on something, we're limiting ourselves. So always say over, or you put a time commitment, always say a minimum of 10 minutes. So just one little quirky thing that I believe energetically helps us. But where it came from was when I was young, everyone just put on me that I'd be a billionaire. With no doubts, no laughing, scoffing. They're like, Dave Meltzer's Midas. He's going to be one of the first billionaires. I know it. If anyone's going to be a billionaire, you're going to be a billionaire. You know, this is friends, family, associates. And I never could connect the dots backwards on, you know, I still can't on how like Bezos makes what he makes or Warren Buffett's worth what he is. I know how to get to 100 million. I can connect the dots backwards and probably 500 million now. But I still have a difficult time in reality connecting that. Ironically, when I shifted that paradigm of receiving, when I started to live my life in a fulfilled, passionate, purposeful, and profitable way, meaning I live with gratitude, that perspective, forgiveness to give me peace, accountability, control, and an inspired life, not just motivated that gets me up, get me back up, get me started, get me back started, but I transitioned that motivation into inspiration. When I started living that way, I started realizing, wow, I could change the world with some techniques that I've learned just to be happy, because happiness is the greatest virus of all time. It spreads simply by witnessing it. It strengthens you mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and financially. Happiness is, nobody attacks other people when they're happy. They don't even get sick when they're happy, because happiness strengthens your immune system. Mm-hmm. So what if I could teach people to be happy by teaching them my values and then 5 daily practices that I empower them with to teach other people, to teach other people? So the number itself, I learned from Jobs, connect the dots backwards. I said to myself, God, there's at least 1,000 guys like Jimmy that I know that have the capability of empowering 1,000 people with the values and the daily practices that I have to empower another 1,000. 1,000 times 1,000 was 1 million. 1 million times 1,000 was 1 billion. And as social media started to grow and grow, it became even more realistic. Now, when I started, trust me, everybody laughed at me, made fun of me, scoffed at me. Even my own family is like, who do you think you are? Jesus Christ, going to change the world, collective consciousness of happiness. What are you doing? Have you lost your mind? Are you on drugs? You know, now they're all applauding me. Oh my God. You know, I went to a family function last weekend, a socially distanced one, but my uncle's, oh my gosh, thank you so much for what you're doing. You know, same guys that were laughing at me 5 years ago thought I went mad.
No, I think that's awesome. I love that. I interviewed Prince EA the other day on my podcast. He's got over 2 billion views on his videos. And I said, Prince, I said, do you realize if the average person watched for about 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes on your videos, it's over 1,200 lifetimes of watching your videos of happiness and gratitude and love. I said, so that's really like changing 1,000 lives. And he's like, I have never heard it put that way, but that's kind of cool, because it's kind of what you're doing, right? I mean, you put this information out, you keep inspiring people like myself, like you said. And then if I can go and inspire and we get 1,000 people, that really is how you change the world, is you make, when there's more love, when there's more happiness. And that's kind of the thing. I actually want to get into this with you, because the biggest problem I think we're facing with the coronavirus and all this is it drops people's frequency. And you've talked about this word more than anyone else out there. I've been studying that exact thing for about a year and a half now, frequency. I think once, and so I want to get into this. I know you did a TED talk about it. But if we can up people's frequency, that's the thing I hate the most about the news media and the coronavirus and all that right now, is it's fear-mongering and it lowers people's frequencies. But get into that. If you could really kind of explain to somebody who's not familiar with this, you have a really cool story of how you came about this information, but then more so just what you've learned, because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, let me start with the story, because I was like your normal, arrogant, closed-minded, capitalistic, young entrepreneur who literally was only concerned about making money. Right. And I wanted to make money so I could give more things to people to get more things. And that, you know, I truly believe money bought happiness. And now I believe money doesn't buy happiness. It allows you to shop. If you shop for the right team with the right things with the right values, you're going to be happy. But moreover, I go on this airplane, arrogant Dave Meltzer, Lee Steinberg, you know, Jerry Maguire. I'm on this airplane and this small doctor is next to me and she looks over at me and she said, "Hey, are you okay?" And I'm looking at her like, "Do you know who I am? Of course I'm okay. I'm Dave Meltzer, you know, arrogant asshole." I said, "Why?" She goes, "Oh, because you're so full of light, but you're blocking it." Now I'm going to India. So I roll my eyes in the back of my head like, this is going to be this longest flight. So I said, "What do you mean I'm blocking it?" She said, "Well," she said, "you're so full of light, you're blocking it." She said, "You know, do you meditate?" I was like, "Meditate?" And I literally went on a 2-minute diatribe about meditate. I don't got time to meditate. Only people that are broke, sick, high on their mom's couch meditate. Why would I meditate? I'm a millionaire. I got everything I ever dreamed of. Beautiful wife, beautiful family, beautiful house, golf course, ski mountain, homes. I'm Dave Meltzer. I run the most notable sports agency in the world. Why would I meditate? That's a waste of time. "Oh, because I could teach you to vibrate faster and find your frequency." Now I'm like, what? Like literally I'm lost. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? And then she said, "Do you know everything vibrates? Everything has a frequency." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah, the earth vibrates the slowest, then plants, animals, humans, sound, light, and then thought. And we can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than us. So if I can elevate your frequency, you can be more aware of things." She said, "Do you know what has the highest frequency or vibrates the fastest?" I said, "What?" She said, "The truth. So I can teach you to pursue the truth, to pursue your potential, to raise your vibration and your frequency so you can be aware of so much more without creating interferences and voids in your life. Does that sound like something you'd be interested in?" Now, I have to tell you, I still said no. Not
really.
Not interested. Then she said to me, right? Talk about a great saleswoman. She hit me right where she knew she could hit me. She said, "Oh, that's too bad, because I could raise your awareness," and this is a real estate lesson, "of when to buy or sell." And my eyebrows went up just like yours. You couldn't inherently like, "Whoa, wait a second. When to buy or sell?" I said, "Oh, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'm interested." And that was the hook that got me into theta meditation, quantum healing, understanding frequency, meditating every day for 14 days, changing my life. Because soon I realized that learning to buy or sell, you know, having awareness of that is nothing compared to the power of starting your day at a higher frequency, setting it as a baseline so you continue to plateau and grow. You don't live your life like the myth of Sisyphus, pushing a boulder up to the top of the hill just to start over. I mean, we're going to talk about real estate a little bit to get down to the nitty gritty of your expertise. And you and I know the worst thing about real estate is when you close your property. Right? Because the boulder's back at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
You haven't plateaued and grown.
I say every time I do my job, I'm out of work again, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so when it comes to frequency, so how does somebody listen? Because I have noticed in my life, as I started to be conscious of this and try to up my frequency in every way, I've attracted a whole new group and type of person to me, because I wasn't going to register to them until I upped my frequency. I believe what you just said. So to an average person listening to this, how do you up your energy or your frequency?
Practice, 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 right? So utilize some sort of breathing initially, lower the bar, start small. Remember, 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a set. You don't have to change your life. It's like if I told you, you know, you never had played golf and I said, "Jimmy, here's a set of clubs, go out and shoot par," right? That would be like telling someone to go find their higher frequency. It's a practice. You know, it's a practice of being quiet. It's a practice of raising your awareness to feel your own vibration, your cellular vibration, your mental, your conscious vibration and subconscious, even your unconscious frequency, and being aware of, gosh, why is it that I think, say, and do? And this is true in real estate a lot. You probably have some brokers and agents that you know, they think, say, and do all the right things, but they keep attracting the exact same problem. The exact same place, the exact same things keep happening. And the opposite's true too. We know idiots, you and I, that you're like, wait a second, this guy is not thinking, saying, and doing all the right things, but why does he always like end up smelling like roses? Why does he have a huge home and beautiful houses and girls and family? And can't they see through that? No, he has a quantum nature, right? He has a frequency, and that's the most powerful thing that allows you to have what you want. It's the thing that is connected to the greatest source of everything, abundance. Remember, your life is just an instant between timelessness and infinity. And so until you realize it's just that instant, you're going to always take yourself too seriously. You're going to create interferences, void shortages, and obstacles. You're going to live outside of that perspective of gratitude. You're going to live in blame, shame, and justification, out of control. But if you live with gratitude, peace, forgiveness, and accountability, you now have this harmonic sense of being in the flow, where not only are you connected to this great source of power and light, but you also are able to allow it to come through you with abundance to everybody else and everything else.
Wow. So along those lines a little bit, you talked about at the beginning how you were kind of born into this Midas touch where everyone knew you were going to be a billionaire, you're going to have the success, but you didn't grow up in a family that came from money per se. And a lot of times there's this misconception that you kind of are stuck in the mindset of the whatever you were born into, right? And so what was different in your case and give us a little background on your youth, because you have some powerful stories from when you were a kid, and then kind of how you got to realize that you had this special frequency.
So, you know, I think I had pieces of it in my family, just not my immediate family, because my dad left when I was 5, and my dad absolutely was entrepreneurial. My dad absolutely carried the same spirit of entrepreneurism, of money. And unfortunately, though, he left, and he was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, a back-end seller, an overseller, which made him a great entrepreneur at the time. But he left, and so I had a single mom that was a second grade teacher who thought the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. I joke around and say that she was a black belt in the martial arts, a third degree black belt in the martial art of Jewish guilt. You know, then that's why literally all six kids, 5 boys, 1 girl, all of them but me went to the Ivy Leagues. They were summa cum laude. They extreme academics. In fact, no joke, Jimmy, my family's so academic, my whole family, that I could graduate Harvard summa cum laude and be one of many, right? It would not be special in my family. It'd be special, but not like extraordinary. You know what I mean?
Like Dave's finally caught up to the rest of us.
Yeah. Like, holy moly, this guy's amazing. But I was an average Division III football player in college. I might as well have been literally Joe Montana, because the difference between me and the next one in my thousands of cousins that are out there, like, is exponential. There's not even someone that could probably, you know, even play high school. It was so pathetic. And so I wanted to stand out as the middle child. I wanted to play sports. I wanted to make a ton of money. I didn't want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a failure. I wanted to show everyone that I could build a business. And I was fired up to buy my mom a house and a car, because I was born also with a happiness gene. So the only time I wasn't happy is I catch my mom with severe financial stress, right? Looking for food. The car breaks down. Everybody that doesn't have money understands the stresses that a single mom with 6 kids must go through. And I'd catch her crying. And it's still like, when I say that, if I can tell you, I have to hold back tears, because my mom sacrificed so much, or I should say she invested so much in her children. It makes my heart full. And I had that same desire that I must be what I can be to buy her that house and a car. And then I created those habits every single day to make a lot of money to buy my happiness and love.
What a cool gift that, you know, your mom, her sacrifice, what you said, but really her investment taught this work ethic in you that made you want to do that. I think it's everybody's dream is to like pay off their mom's, you know, especially in your case, where it's a single mom in their mom's house. What was that feeling like? How old were you when you did that? And what was that experience like to pay off her house and car and all that?
I got to tell you, because it's twofold, and most people will get this. The second happiest day in my life was when I bought my mom the house and the car, and I felt that I was her favorite child, that I had bought happiness and love from my mom, reaffirming, I believe, that money could buy happiness and love. That's how exalted I was. But the best day, And people, I hope you understand this. As you know, I lost over $100 million in real estate stocks, bonds, and investments. And I went bankrupt. The shameful day of my life was to go tell my mom, because I defined myself by how much money I make. My whole definition, my whole identity. And I was terrified that I'd have to go tell my mom that I lost everything. But worse, the only reason I wanted to be rich as a kid was to buy my mom a house and a car. I forgot to take my mom's house out of my name. So not only did I have to go tell her I was bankrupt, I had to tell her she was moving, that I'd lost her home. Talk about a day. Best day of my life. People are like, what are you talking about? That's bullshit. Best day. I'll tell you why it was the best day of my life. Because I was terrified that my mom would literally have a heart attack and die, that she would be crushed emotionally, disappointed beyond belief. Like all these things going through my head. I'm still getting choked up thinking about it. I knock on that door. I'm in tears. I can't hold him back. And my mom's like, what's the matter? I'm like, oh, mom, I screwed up. I'm accountable. But I lost everything. We're going to have to move. I am so sorry. I said, but even worse, mom, I didn't take your house out of your, didn't take it out of my name. I'm so sorry. I lost your house. You're going to have to move too, but I promise I'll make it up to you. She didn't even blink. Mm-hmm. Not one tear, not one waver. All she said was, come here. Are you okay? Can I give you some money? Like, why? Because that was the switch in my mind. That I understood why people who love me would tell me that I was lost, that it didn't matter. I didn't need to be the richest man in the cemetery, that I couldn't take money with me when I was gone, that money doesn't buy happiness, that there was this unconditional love, this relationship that I could have, and I still had the chance to do so. And when I saw the lady that I'm in the backseat of a station wagon. My dad is a deadbeat dad who's making money, married a girl closer to my age than his, right? And I'm in the backseat going, why can't you be more like dad? Meanwhile, he's giving no child support, right? I'm sitting there always telling my mom, what do you know? You made $17,000 a year. I make that in a day. Like, this is the kid in me, right? The one who's arrogant and makes money. And here she was showing me who knew nothing. I still choke up, right? Because she showed me that day, I don't know what I don't know. Right.
Such a beautiful story. There's nothing, I think the most powerful thing in the world is the day you recognize, like, people just love me because I'm me. I show up in love. I'm a light, and I don't have to have anything. I don't have to be anything or do anything. I'm just lovable because I'm love and I give love. What a lesson for your mom to be able to give you in them. I knew where you were going before you said it. You said that it was actually the best day of my life, because I've had that experience where you just all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, people just love me because of me. It's not because of who I am or what I have. And it's such a powerful moment.
And let me ask you a question about that too, Jimmy, because you know, you run such a big team with Keller Williams. You're in a hyper competitive space. And I think I've done a lot of real estate in my career, and I still do a lot of executive coaching with guys like you with big teams to teach them. But you know, how do you teach people? Because it took me years to understand when someone said, David, learn to love you. And you're someone that has learned to love you. What does that mean? And how do you teach your team to love themselves?
Yeah, for me, it's something that's more recent, to be honest, the last year and a half, I would say, because I kind of fell into a lot of those traps too. You know, I'll tell a quick story that I share sometimes is when I was a little kid, my dad wanted me to get held back in the eighth grade to be a better baseball player. Baseball was my life, but my older brothers had played college and I wasn't quite good enough to be a star. And he didn't know if I'd make, you know, even play high school, let alone college. And he really pressured me to get held back. And I decided ultimately to stand up to him, and I just didn't want to. I said, hey, I don't want to do it. I'm going to go forward. And he looked me dead in the eyes and he said, just so you know, you'll never play baseball again. You're not good enough. And I wrote under my hat, I wrote, you're not good enough. And so for 3 years, I wore a hat just reinforcing you're not good. That was my way to motivate myself. And that was the day I became an achiever. But I was always trying from that day forward to prove myself to everyone else around me, right? Like prove that I was enough, prove that I was good enough. So whether it was in baseball, whether it was in service, whether it was with my real estate, or even where it really screwed me up was in dating. It was never enough to date one girl or to date just one person. Like I always needed better. I needed people to see that I had these beautiful women around me. I needed them.
I'm so glad you didn't say biologically. I was a little bit scared.
Yeah. But I needed people to see that I was successful. And all of a sudden I was doing, you know, kind of like a meditation. And I hadn't thought of this hat in about 15 years. This was a December 9th, last year and a half ago. And I see this hat and I saw that it said, you're not good enough. And I had this feeling, I was like, oh my gosh, like what has that done to myself? Like, I've really screwed myself up here with this thought. And I had this like thought of, hey, this has served you, but it doesn't anymore. It's time to let it go. You are enough. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I released it, called my dad and told him, I said, you know, hey, long story short, here's some things that have, you know, but I want you to know I love my life and I'm grateful for you. And if you're going to beat yourself up over some of these things you did wrong, I want you to give yourself credit for everything you did right. And he, you know, had this beautiful moment where, you know, he's crying and I'm crying. And in that moment, I started the process of self-healing and self-love and being able to understand that I am enough and I'm okay. And I don't need to prove myself to anybody anymore. And so I teach that lesson. I teach people to try to understand, like, we all, it's very normal to believe you're not lovable. You're not enough. We all have those same two fears, but understand that, like, you just being and you just trying to just be the best person you can be, that you being here, or you're a light. There's a reason you're on my team. You already are lovable. I already want you here. I already want you in my life. If you're a friend of mine, you don't need to prove yourself. You don't need to be anything. Just be here. And I think that's a process I'm always trying to improve on. But I think for me, to answer your question, that's the best way I've been able to share that and be able to help others try to get to that spot as well.
And you seem like the kind of person, you know, I always say that pain to me is just an indicator. It's a turn signal, not a break, right? You don't got to halt everything because there's pain. You actually, you change directions to something better. But you and I share these beliefs about pain and how to utilize pain in order to effectuate the change that's necessary to grow. How do you see pain and how has it been beneficial in your life?
Yeah, I always say pain is trying to teach you something, right? Like, anytime you feel pain, it's because something, it's your body or your mind or whatever trying to teach you something. So I try to lean into that and I try to understand the pain. I actually really try to lean into the pain. Like, if your body's the best at teaching you, like physically, if you have something that hurts, something's wrong, like quit running on your leg if your ankle's broken, you know, kind of thing. And I kind of look at it the same way. If you feel a heartache or if you feel like a pain because of something you've done, it's like, all right, like, what's the lesson to learn here? And I just always try to be very self-aware. Like, I always look at things. So I'll give an example. I had a recent breakup with this woman I was dating, and we dated for about 9.5 months. And I had to look internally and look at all the things that I needed to do different. That pain that came from it, I was like, it was almost more pain for what could have been than what actually was. And I said, okay, so how do I take this and learn and show up better in the next relationship? Instead of kind of, because I think what a lot of times what we see today is a lot of people, they have pain in their life, but instead of zeroing in on what causes the pain, they start blaming and they start looking at all these things. Like, you see it in the news every day, like all these protesters out there and everything. I'm like, your pain is so valid. Like, you guys have this pain and you have these problems. You have these things that are not fair or right. But what is the pain trying to teach you? Instead of, you know, a lot of times what people are leaning into is trying to make everybody wrong or trying to make this whole thing bigger than it is. And it's like, it's such a personal thing. And it's like, what can you today do? You know, you had the national conventions for the Republicans and the Democrats recently. It's like, they're not going to change much for you. What did you do today to change the world of people around you? Because you can affect people that are in your world. You can't affect the masses very easily. Like, you can if you get your stage big enough, but like, the average person is affecting maybe a dozen people at a high level. So it's like, what are you doing every day? What is that pain teaching you? Who did you hurt in the last 30 days that you can go make their life better now? Where can you show up a little bit more lovingly and a little bit better for other people? And I think that's the lesson I try to teach people is quit trying to focus on this macro or micro, you know, ginormous problem that's out there and say, whose life can I make a little bit better today? And I think that's what you're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do. That's why we're doing these things, right? Like the podcast and the book that I just did, all these different things. It's because we're trying to affect as much as we can to those people that really we have an outreach to.
And I love the way you put it, right? Be kind to your future self, just do good deeds. And one of the ways that we learn lessons is to experience ourselves. But as I got older, I learned there's a better way to learn the lessons, and that's to ask for help from a mentor. And I know mentorship is extremely important to you, even within Keller Williams and your team and all the variable layers of business and personal life that you're experiencing. What's the best piece of advice that you've gotten from a mentor?
Oh man, David, people make fun of me because I've had so many coaches and mentors. I say it's taken a whole village to get me to this point. Like, but I have.
I'll send you my card.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, you've been mentoring me without even knowing it, if I'm being honest. That's what I do. But yeah. But I have a life coach. I have a relationship therapist. Even though I'm single now, I still keep that therapist to help me get ready for the next one. I have a real estate coach. And then I have a nutritionist. I have a personal trainer. I have all these people in my life because you have to, I just want to learn from the best people. Like one thing that I was excited about this podcast about is I've listened to you talk a lot about empathy. And for the last 8 months, I've really been focusing on empathy. And I said, I'm so excited to talk to David about empathy. This is the guy that you've put so much work into this. And I'll answer my question. Then I want to kind of get into that a little bit. But my point is I find who does the thing the best. And then I try to go learn from that person. Right. And so for me, coaches, it is so invaluable. When I got into real estate, my first 6 months, I sold 3 or 4 houses. Spinning my wheels, had no idea what I was doing. I found a flyer in my desk, and it was a invitation to go to this seminar that was literally the next day. It was a Mike Ferry seminar. He's the top real estate coach in the country. And I'd never heard of the guy at that point. I was 6 months into real estate, never heard of Mike Ferry. I go to the seminar, and after 3 days, I don't have any money to my name. I'm dead broke, but I have to do this. I throw my hat over the fence, pay $12,000 to sign up for a one-year program. I literally didn't have $500 in my name. I had to tell him to hold my credit card for a few weeks till I closed a house. But by the end of that first year, by getting that coach, I actually closed 60 homes in my first year. I was the regional rookie of the year for the Western United States. Year two, I was one of the two finalists for salesperson of the year on the Salt Lake Board of Realtors. It all came because I hired the coach that had been there that knew exactly what I needed to do. And that was the day I became a giant believer in coaching. And so I've hired some coaches that weren't as good and other ones that were amazing, but you have to have a third party that can look at it unbiasedly, right? A lot of people go to their family and friends for advice. Well, your parents are scared for you. They don't want you to experience pain. So if you go to your dad for advice, he's going to give you the advice that gives you, in his eyes, the least amount of pain, but it's not the right advice. And the same thing with your buddies. If you're like asking if you should, you know, what should I do with this girl that I'm dating or whatever, this woman I'm dating, they're going to tell you they have biases. They want you to be around for them. Maybe they want their wingman back.
Maybe they want the girl.
Yeah. A lot of times they've tried moving on your lady, you know, like you got it. So I love having these unbiased people that I can go to and get real advice. My coaches, I mean, they could ruin me because I get vulnerable with them. You know, I mean, they know me in and out and they know my weaknesses, my vulnerabilities. And here's the cool part that I've learned by having these coaches too is, every time I go to them and I think, oh my gosh, they're going to judge me for this. They're going to think they love me so much more when I open up and actually get vulnerable. And you're realizing your daily, everyday life, the more I'm willing to actually be vulnerable and open up, the more lovable I am. And so you start to kind of develop that muscle a little bit and you develop these deeper relationships and you kind of start to be able to recognize people on your frequency that can give you that advice and get you to the next level, wherever you're trying to get.
Yeah, vulnerability strengthens your frequency, right? You have a strength of a signal, a spectrum of a signal, the clarity of the message. Vulnerability makes you invulnerable. And, you know, for me, that was a very hard lesson to learn. And I think, you know, I am one of the most vulnerable people in the public because I will just let my frequency be what it is. And what I used to think people, you know, I would try to please everyone. And when you try to please everyone, nobody's pleased. When I try to seek their approval, nobody approved. All of a sudden, when I just was myself and was vulnerable and said, hey, look, I made a ton of mistakes, or, you know, I'm a hypocrite, or whatever else I say that's true, people are like, oh yeah, you know, I love that. You know, I want to be around you. I want your advice. And I am a huge fan. I mentor, you know, tons of people for that very reason. And I go as far, because you and I both know it's a squirrely business. Like, I guarantee profitability. Like, I work month to month. I don't lock anybody in for a year. I literally tell, dude, you want to work with me? This is what I'm going to charge you, but I guarantee you, you'll make more money. If not, your money back. Because I do not want to work unless I'm providing more value. But myself, I have a sleep coach, nutritionist, stretching, like every kind of mentor I can. I have a relationship to money mentor. Because I think that people, like I go for the things that other people don't. I always say the easiest way to be successful is know what you want. Because if you then just spend your time finding out who has what you want, you can either ask them for it and they might give it to you, or you can ask them to teach you how to get it, right? Yep. It's that easy. And I'm always amazed how many people just give it to me. I was at one of my friends, super entrepreneur, and she was moving. She bought a home cash furnished in Fisher Island. You should have got the commission, a bit of good. But she has two homes in Encinitas, right? And she's an amazing entrepreneur. And I just mentioned to her, I'm like, God, I can't find, you know, all the equipment that I want, you know, the market and this, you know, home equipment. I want a rower and I want one of those mirrors for my wife. And she's like, oh, I got those. And I was like, oh, can I buy them off of your move-in? She's like, no, I'll give it to you. You know, I'm like, whoa. Right. And the old Dave would have said, no, I took it.
Yeah. Well, that's no, but that is, the universe seems to just conspire in our favor when we ask for things. Like, it really is. It's the oldest principle of the Bible, right? Like, knock and you shall receive, that whole thing. But
can't ask, can't out ask the universe as well.
That's exactly right. I wanted to get into the empathy piece a little bit because it's something I have to say a lot. And I listened to your TED talk about it. But walk us through a little bit, like, selfishly, I want to know this for myself, but obviously anybody listening can gain from this. But I mean, how does one go about to develop more empathy? That's something that I am, I want to be the most empathetic person I can. And it's never been my nature in the past, but I feel myself getting there, but I want to know, what can I do to truly feel empathy, which is not feeling bad for somebody. It's actually the opposite. It's feeling what they're feeling, but to get to that spot.
Exactly. And in that connectivity. So there's two, I call it effective communication. And what happens is people, as you said, confuse sympathy with empathy. Sympathy is feeling bad for somebody. And I promise you, you cannot feel bad enough for someone to make them feel good, sick enough to make them well, or poor enough, which a lot of people think they can be poor enough to make others rich. It ain't happening. Look, people told me I've had the best year of my life this year. And someone's like, dude, you should calm down a little bit. You know, people are suffering. I'm like, no, not a chance. Because I know one thing. I can't be poor enough to make these people rich, but I can be rich enough to make them rich. And if I keep getting rich, I will make them rich. I'll give me more power and et cetera. Now, empathy is effective communication. And the first connection when we're empathetic isn't towards others. It's towards the source of everything. What lights up that inspiration, right? So for me, to be empathetic, I have to connect to the greatest source of light, love, and lessons. Other people call it God. Buddha, Joseph Smith, whatever you want to, I don't care. Whatever inspires you, you have to create a relationship to that and figure out what causes the corrosion, interferences, shortages, and voids, and obstacles, and the separation from that which you're always connected to in you. And then once you figure out those things, I call it the practice ending fear. So I identify the need to be right, the need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, worried, guilty, all these different feelings. They create that interference between that time that I feel like I'm in a flow. I know you're a baseball player, and some days that ball seems so big, it was no problem. Other days, there's not a chance.
Yeah.
That's the interference that I'm talking about. Now, once you establish that practice, now you can be empathetic because you can allow that light, lessons, and love to come through you with appreciation, which means gratitude, being thankful for it, but two, adding your value, your secret frequency, your personal experiential giving and receiving values. And then the next practice of empathy is clearing the connection, the same ego-based consciousness between you and everything else. The tree has no branches. We're all connected. So we're always projecting onto other people. I spend an inordinate amount of time practicing ending fear between me and the great source of power, light, love, and lessons, and me and everything else. So I'll look and say to myself, and I tell that story. I have several. I got a toilet paper story, you know, that I go sit down at 4 a.m. and the roll's gone, right? And I have to drop, I literally, like a ferocious Buddha, I was about to ruin my whole day in relationship with my wife like I did when I was newlywed. Instead, I caught myself, right? And I created empathy. And I didn't take myself so seriously. And I cleared the connection. Because people, when you're in ego-based consciousness, you accelerate in the wrong direction. We go so far off. And I tell this story about coming outside and my daughter's car is missing. Yeah, have you heard that story?
I've heard the story. You want to share it real quick, though, for people?
I'll share it real quick. Because, and you know, maybe we could kind of conclude with it, too, because it's the total difference in life. I come outside my normal routine, 4:30 a.m. on a Saturday to go work out. 17-year-old daughter's car is missing. I immediately go into ego-based consciousness, into frustration, anger, and I'm about to pick up the phone and call her and say, where the are you? Where the is your car? Now, that may not sound like anything abnormal, but let me tell you what happens. I call her and I'm like, first of all, I don't do that, right? I stop, drop, and roll, get down to Buddha. I ask myself, why am I so mad? I say, I'm not mad. I'm afraid that something's happened to someone I love the most in my life that I'm responsible for.
That's beautiful, by the way. To be able to do that is so beautiful. Just to see the mind talking about it and understanding that anger is the secondary emotion, that what's really going on, I'm scared. That's so beautiful. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, and I think identifying the first step, identifying what the secondary fears are very important, like the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated. But because I was able to calm down into the Buddha state, I then called her in calm and said, hey, where are you? I'm in my bed. Why'd you wake me? Oh, I'm so sorry, but your car's missing. Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. Kids were drinking, and you told me when kids were drinking, I should never drive, so I took an Uber home. Oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm sorry for waking you. Oh, it's okay, Daddy. I love you. I love you too. Now, this might not sound significant, but this is where empathy comes to play. This is the definition of empathy for me, because most people, including me, would have normally called and said, where the are you? And she said, I'm in my room. You woke me. Well, where the F is your car? Well, Dad, you told me when kids are drinking that I should Uber. Kids were drinking. You were drinking. I'm going to take your car. I'm going to take your phone, and you can stay up in your room the rest of the weekend and think about what you just did. That's not fair. Oh, I'll show you, Sarah. F you, Dad. I hate you. Right? Now, if that's not bad enough, and everyone's going, okay, I get it, Dave. No, you don't get it. Because let me tell you how bad acceleration in the wrong direction is, how empathy is a superpower. Notice the two stories and how they differ. Well, think about the results. Because next time, if I would have gone the ego-based route,
right,
next time kids are drinking, my daughter would have rightly in her head said, I don't want to be in trouble with my dad. I love my dad. I don't want to get him mad. I'll be fine. You know what? I don't want to lose my car or my phone. I'll be fine. I'm going to drive home. Her life could change. My life could change. Somebody else we don't even know, their life could change. All why? Because I wasn't practicing empathy. I wasn't practicing effective communication between me and this great source of light, love, and lessons and everything I'm connected to. And if we don't do it, we end up, you know, broke. We end up with no sales. We can't understand why we're losing so many listings, or people won't buy the house or sell the. Why is it? I'll tell you why. Because you are an ego-based consciousness. You're not empathetic. If you would have credibility, emotional attachment, and be able to quantify and articulate the reasons, impacts, and capabilities, you would have whatever you want with a shared vision and be able to manage and develop the vision so it thrives. Empathy, gratitude, and accountability are the three tools that all combine together to allow you to manifest or attract exactly what you want at the right way at the perfect time. Guaranteed.
Wow. It's such a beautiful story, man. Thank you for sharing it, because that ultimately, I think sometimes we don't even realize how much worse or better our lives are if we do or don't have empathy. That's a very good example of that person in that ego basis would probably be thinking he did it all right because he's in his ego, when in reality, like, what a beautiful experience you were able to have instead. And it makes me, like, I think back to different experiences that I've had where I was like in my ego, and you're just, you know, you want to give yourself
girlfriends, some, right? With girlfriends.
Oh, all the time. You know, you do things and you're just like, I'll give one just really quick to give an example of doing it the wrong way. And this is like so important for me to hear. I was with some friends playing volleyball a couple months ago with this last woman that I was dating, and she had a surgery, and so she couldn't play. So she's sitting on the sideline. And I was just playing volleyball, and, you know, I was in my thing playing, and I wasn't taking into account that she was kind of like, hey, I don't feel like I belong here. Well, she goes off, and, you know, she ends up running into one of her little brother's old friends who's got a dog, and she talks to him in the park for about a half hour. And I was in my ego, and I was like, you made me look stupid in front of my friends. We were talking to this guy for 30 minutes without even understanding that she was, I'm just calling myself out here, but, like, you know, if I'd have been in empathy, I'd have been like, oh, like, she, I wonder if she's, you know, feels bad. She doesn't belong, all these different things. And instead, we got in this big fight where it could have been this beautiful moment where I could have shared love and empathy and all these different things. And it was kind of like the moment I realized, like, man, like, why did I react that way? Like, and it's my own insecurity, right? Like, what's the emotion I was feeling? I was thinking my friends were going to think that my girlfriend's talking to some other guy. I was worried about my ego. I was worried about all these stupid things instead of worrying about truly her and trying to understand her position, what was going on. I didn't even bother to find out who this guy was before I kind of got mad at her. And
happens every day, and we ruin our lives in very simple, subtle ways. We can change it, and we can create the expansion, growth, and happiness that we want with really simple daily practices. But they are practices, and I know you and I believe in consistency. And so give yourself a break. You know, it's much better to do something every day and forgive yourself. If you feel stuck, good for you. I always say, you are a 10-year-old's foot. And people are like, what are you talking about? They're like, I'm stuck, you know, because I'm the breakthrough expert. I'm like, you're a 10-year-old's foot. And like, what are you talking about? I said, when my 10-year-old tells me that he's stuck in his shoes, I know that he's growing. He needs a new pair of shoes. That's a good news. He's growing. You're stuck. That means you're growing. If you don't feel anything, you're not trying. You're not growing. You're missing out. It's get stuck being stuck. You're going to end up in such a big shoe someday, right? And people don't see it that way. And we have to look at things in a positive light. And That's why I love, you know, in a business sense, you're able to do it in what I believe one of the oldest professions in America, one of the best professions in America. At the core, you know, it's value, it's service, it changes life. I'm a huge fan of real estate. And every time I tell myself, you know, after going bankrupt, I'm never going to do real estate again. I think I have 5 properties right now, and I'm taking the capabilities, looking to see where the margins of millionaires will be next. Because look, just like money doesn't disappear, real estate doesn't disappear. No. There's always something that's buying and selling, and you got to be the person that can find those things and effectuate the meeting of the minds and providing value to both parties. That's what I love about what you do. And Keller Williams, of course, is the best of the best. And your social media person was my first mentee, Jeff Woods.
Oh, yeah.
And I created his show. He was a pharmaceutical rep. And I coached him into what he does there with Keller Williams and runs social media and digital marketing, and created a podcast called, he wanted to call it The Mentor and have me on it. And I said, no, this is about you. It's called The Mentee. Yeah, so yeah. Tell people what you've learned. There's a ton of mentors out there with varying degrees. Let's teach it that way. So anyway, man, this has been incredible. We got to do this again.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it, David. And for my audience and yours, I think this is going to be so valuable. People want to find out more about you. You're pretty easy to find. I mean, just go online, Google your name. But is there anywhere in particular that you want me to send people?
Yeah, if you could, there's 2 places. One, have them email me directly if they can join my free trainings or listen to my free trainings on the playbook. It's just David@dmeltzer.com, first initial last name, dmeltzer.com. And then I have a text community that we share everything. It's 949-298-2905. And where can everybody reach you, Jimmy?
Yeah, best way to get a hold of me is on my Instagram, is Mr. Jimmy Rex. Just send me a message there. I love to get back to people on Instagram. That's the best place to find me at. At the same website, Mr. Jimmy Rex has all my courses, material, the trainings, and everything I do. So Mr. Jimmy Rex is the best way to get a hold of me, Dave.
I think we share one thing. We're going to make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. And let's get together in person when this universe allows us.
I can't wait to do that. And we'll definitely know who I'm calling and what events I'm going to. So thank you.
Got it, my friend.
Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. Thank you so much.